Welcome to New World Notes. I'm Kenneth Doust, though you'd never know it by the music, which you may recognize as the theme from the old Gene Shepherd weekly radio show on WOR AM and FM New York, circa 1965. Shepherd was a humorist, cultural critic, observer, storyteller, and commentator rolled into one, whom we'll get to eventually. I was seduced by the romance of radio as a young teenager. The pièce de résistance, or capacitance, or impedance, or reactance, or reluctance. Yep, there's a real scientific unit of measurement in electronics, reluctance. And as every husband knows, reluctance is so similar to resistance and impedance that only an electronics engineer could explain the difference. Anyway, the greatest radio of my youth was a radio chassis I salvaged from a neighbor's discarded home entertainment center in the 1960s. And, of course, I got the 12-inch speakers, too. I hooked everything up in my second-floor bedroom and strung antenna wire all around the ceiling and let her rip. The transformer hummed, the 7 vacuum tubes glowed, and when I should have been sleeping, I was hearing a radio that I had never heard before. In southeast Pennsylvania, we didn't normally get stations from New York City, but WOR was coming through, clearly, and I found myself listening to the oddest and most interesting radio show I had ever heard. It was one of Gene Shepherd's celebrated 45-minute monologues. He wove this wonderful tale. I still remember part of it. He was explaining how to tell where the mafia has its headquarters in your town. Now, don't be a fool. It's not in that dark, shuttered old building with the name plaque, Palermo Social Club. You think the mafia is that dumb? No, here's where the mafia has its regional headquarters. In that nondescript establishment in the declining light industrial area with a name like Acme Transmission Repair, Northside Speedy Windshield and Glass Replacement, Jim's Chrome Plating and Transformer Rewinding, Inc. As a young teenager, I thought this hilarious, and I knew just the place in my town he was referring to, Sears Appliance Repair, on Chester Pike. The show I'm rebroadcasting today is from April 1965. I had to cut out more than half of it, including, alas, the commercial he started reading for American Heritage magazine, which morphed into a monologue about George Washington and returned to the commercial 3.5 minutes later, which reminds him of the lunch he had with Malcolm X. In this edited version, you'll miss some of how Shep ties every theme and motif together perfectly. What starts out sounding like a Shaggy Dog story ends up revealed as a beautifully crafted, impeccably organized composition. Here's the late, great Gene Shepherd on Roskow's, Covington, Kentucky, and the contrast between the way the media depict things and the way they looked when you're actually experiencing them.
Yes, somebody sent me this three-color ad here. It's kind of a nice one, too. It's very pretty. It's in soft pastel shades. And it's called a grenade lighter. And it shows a hand here holding it. You see, it's a real grenade, too. And it really looks, something. It looks and feels like a real hand grenade. But pull the ring or push the button, and you get an immediate light. They go on to say, realistic reproduction of a grenade assures this lighter of long, hard use, for it is a real conversation piece and a unique gift. Now, the key word in this, of course, is long, hard use. It's the kind of thing you just don't get tired of. Obviously, grenades have had a deep fascination for people since time began. And I can see a lot of different... This is a new idea in conversation pieces, actually. Grenade. Here, Charlie, watch. Here, catch. That'll cause a little excitement. I could see a whole new area of decor breaking out like this. For example, you can have a bazooka shell. Now, that's interesting looking. Have you ever seen a bazooka shell, Matt? Very attractive. It's very functional looking. Very streamlined. It's very interesting. A bazooka shell that actually is an electric can opener. You just hook it up. It's a lot of conversation. What's that over there, Myrtle? It's, well, nothing. Watch. And it comes to look. Then there's other things, too. I kind of think an 80-millimeter mortar shell would make a kind of a nice ashtray. Keep things moving in your house. Now, if James Bond did not carry guns, I suspect James Bond would not be nearly as attractive to people. I mean, he carries big Roscoes. He's really, I mean, he shows up with a Roscoe, I'll tell you. You never heard that expression? Is that not an expression used here in the East, Roscoe? I have known many a person that has been written about. I have known a lot of people in my life who have been written up in the paper, who have been written up in contemporary accounts. In fact, it's funny. I knew Malcolm X. I might as well tell you that. I knew Malcolm X, but he does not come out in any of the interviews or the paper accounts that I've read about him. He just isn't the way he's described, the way the newspapers describe him. And that is in person, when you're sitting down having a cup of coffee with Malcolm X. I have known other people who have been written up in newspapers, and they never are, and even in very serious books. In short, I don't believe the written account of a person can ever quite capture that person. And so I still wonder how George Washington really was when he's putting his teeth in the morning. You know, putting on his socks. He's got to go off to another hard day in the Revolution. He's sitting in his tent. Well, of course, he had a lot of hard days in the Revolution. He's sitting in his tent, you know. It's about the second or third year of the Revolution. The snow is up to the roof. And he's sitting in his tent, and they've been chased all over New Jersey, you know. And it looks like things are going from bad to worse, and now they're going even from worse to worser. And he's sitting in his tent, and he's pulling on his socks, and the wind is blowing in underneath the cot. And he hears a couple of guys griping out there, and another guy, fist fights breaking out there among the riflemen. And he puts his head in his hands, and he just sort of rubs his temples for a minute, you know, before he puts his wig on. So, oh boy, what a can of peas we've opened up here. What a can of peas. Oh, gee. Oh, man. You know how the Jerseyites are very different to people who live in New York? Somehow living in Jersey is a whole new mystique. Well, multiply that by 500, and you have the difference between Cincinnati and Kentucky. The accent is different. Everything. The whole scene. And the heat. Ooh, boy, the heat lays there. That heat just sort of lays down in that river. And about August, you can smell the river. And it does. Now, it isn't the smell. It isn't the smell of decay or anything. It's just the river. It's kind of a green, watery, catfish, heat, cattail, sort of soil, mud. Life smell. It's a strange smell, and it permeates the whole atmosphere all around. And across the river, in Covington and in Newport, these two towns lay there. And they're famous for a lot of things. Let me tell you, these towns really, really go. And at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning on Madison Avenue in Kentucky and out across in Newport, the towns are wide open, wild. Just not the kind of wide open like Times Square, but a different kind. They have juke joints. This is a Kentucky version of the discotheque. And very different. Great big red and green jukebox over in the corner there, and it's playing Elvis Presley records. Hound dog! You hound dog! You rattle hound dog! It comes out night after night, and the sound of twanging guitars lay out there across that brick road, just like snow drifting down out of the sky. You can hear those guitars and those banjos a twanging, and you can hear those strange nasal voices. And they wander around the streets at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. And the one sound that you hear at maybe 3 o'clock in the morning is the sound of guys roaring up and down the streets that have come up from Hazard, Kentucky, and Rabbit Hash, Kentucky. Yeah, there's a town called Rabbit Hash, Kentucky. And they roar up and down the streets in their hot rods. They're really not hot rods. They're 47 Mercuries. There are 53 Fords that have been channeled, cut down, and painted purple. You know, that kind of thing. And you go, wow! Get out of my way! Wow! Well, that's life among the Aborigines. It's really something out there. It's a wild scene. And so, I'm living in this, see. I've got a pad above a jewelry store. Right in the heart of the swinging belt in Covington, it would be like having... Literally, it would be like having an apartment over a juice joint, the place where they sell orange juice, right at 46 and Broadway. And I kind of laughed. And so my apartment was never dark, man, never. It was lit from the outside by red neon lights. No matter what happened, I pull the shades and it comes through. It soaks in through the walls, and you could feel the jukeboxes. Heat, oh, boy. It's like 170 degrees. All the time in there, and I could smell the catfish. I could smell the catfish in the river, and I could smell the water going past. You could literally smell it and feel it. And once in a while, out on the river boat would go by. I don't know whether any of you have ever heard the sound of a stern wheeler going past a block and a half from your house with the calliope going. It is a wild sound. And yeah, you can hear it drifting at 2 o'clock in the morning. You hear boop, 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 boop. That would be when it was on its trip out. And then when it's coming back, the calliope is turned off, and all you hear is chook, 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 chook. That's the way a paddle wheeler sounds from a block away. Chook, 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 chook. And she drifts into the landing down there. And then, boop, boop. And that's it, silence. Well, about a half a block down the street from me was the Wheel Inn Diner. How about that for a name? The Wheel Inn Diner. And it had a great big neon wheel that reached up about 75 feet in the air, you know, like a truck wheel. And it was one of those that spun around and go, wheeling, it would say, in green, wheeling, big red wheel. And then it would be a big arrow that cut right across. It said, eat, eat, eat. And all the time it's pointing, wheeling. Well, every night about 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning, I couldn't sleep in this sweat box I lived in. Oh, boy, it's hot. And I could hear way off in the distance the calliope, and I could hear the jukeboxes going. I hear the knife fights breaking off down at Delaney's. All this, they had fights up and down the street constantly. And I'd hear the roar of the hot rod. They're always making with the brakes, you know. And then I would hear those Kentucky voices. Get out of my way! Who you talking to like that? All right, now you got the picture. Well, every night when I found I couldn't sleep, which was every night about 2, 2.30, I would get up. And remember, I had a radio program at 5 a.m., so I would get up, and I would walk down onto that brick road, and I would see the purple Fords going past, and hear the yelling and the hollering and the guitars crunching over other guys' heads, and I could hear the knives going into ribs. And I would walk down to the middle of the next block to the Wheel Inn Diner. And it was brightly lit. You know how diners are with the big white lights all over the place and the chrome and the stainless steel and everything. It was very antiseptic. And always back at the counter is Clem, big fat guy. He's back there, and always say, "Hiya, boy." I'd come in. They didn't know. They were, "Hiya, boy." That's Kentucky. "Hiya, boy." And there was a woman there named Emily who worked behind the counter, big fat blonde who had rings all over her. And she had big earrings that hung down to her knees, you know, that kind of stuff. And she's working back there with a white costume. I'd come in. I'd sit down in the middle there. And two or three guys, truck drivers, would be down at the other end. A couple of truck drivers would be at the other end. And then there would be two or three people on dates, what euphemistically were called dates in Kentucky. And they'd sit down there at the other end. I hear this voices twanging. The jukebox starts roaring out. Ernest Tubb record is booming out. Or maybe the Delmore Twins are racking it out. Or Grandpa Jones starts singing, "I want to come back to you, baby, pow. I want to come back to you now, pow, pow, pow. I want to come back. I want to come back.
pop, 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 pop. I'm a-going to go on. Oh, boy.
So I'm leaning back there, drinking my... I always would come in and get myself a vanilla malt. It was the only thing that was cold, and it was cold, and I didn't... The Cokes were sweet, and I'd sit there and drink my vanilla malt and eat a hamburger and sort of... Kill time. That's all. And the neon signs are flashing. This is really American life, you know. This is pure, distilled American life. Well, one night I'm sitting there. It must have been about 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning. Just sitting there. Clambus back of the cash register, one of these big chrome jobs, you know, sitting there picking his teeth, reading the police gazette. And the big old waitress is putting some more pies into the case. Everything is going normal. A couple of clots are sitting up there in the front there with their jackets on and their jazzy little, you know, the little hats with the white bills, their motorcycle type things. The world is going along. When suddenly the door opens, they had these sliding doors, and it was an air-conditioned place. That's really why I came there. And they had these little sliding doors. And the door slides open, and in steps a chick. A chick, a real chick. She was about 18 years old. Real, you know, and she was sort of dark-haired and looked very, very civilized. And I said, well, hey, George. And the chick comes in and sits down at the end booth. They had little tiny booths in there. She sits at the end booth. Clem starts to get up. He's going to walk over and see what she wants. And he's got a couple of menus in his hand. And Clem walks over towards her. And in then came her little brother. Her little brother looked like he was about, I'd say, 10, 12, something like that. This kid comes in. And he's wearing a sweater, you know, a little sleeveless type sweater with a pair of chinos. And he sits down there with her. And Clem goes over and says, well, what do you want, folks? The girl takes the menu and she looks at it. I'm eyeing the chick, Sam. George. Things are picking up here. And so I turn, you see, and I'm watching her now in the mirror. They had a mirror right back at a bar, see. And I'm sitting there watching her and drinking my malt and knocking down the cheeseburger, and I'm trying to play it cool. I'm sitting there saying, oh, well, she's got to see this profile. Eventually, she's got to see it. See, I'm watching the thing. Man. I'm giving her the eye, and she is paying no attention, and she's sitting there with her kid brother. And Clem goes back around the counter, and now he gets a pair of a couple of pieces of pumpkin pie or something. He comes out with a pie, and he's got the Coke and a candy or whatever it is, and he goes back, and he puts it down in his little chit-chat, and he comes back and sits down then, back at a cash register. And I'm watching there. I'm slopping up that vanilla malt. And outside, Kentucky is going out. Wow! You know? Wow! Wow! I want my sunshine, my little sunshine. You are my sunshine. It's going on out there. Oh, if you have never lived until you have heard somebody sing through one nostril, at 5 o'clock in the morning, you are my sunshine, my only sunshine. You make my life go all the way. Be-da-do-da-o-da-o. Well, that's the way they sound. They go in and out, you know, night after. I'm sitting there, and the life is just rich and full. Now, Ernie Tubb is roaring out of the jukebox, and I'm watching the chick. I'm really on the make, see. I'm looking the scene over, and I'm knocking down the malt. And Clem is looking at me. See, Clem realizes that old Shep is going to go into high gear here any second now. See, he's looking at me. He's kind of got that. You know how fat men grin? He's got that fat man grin, you know. So just half grin there. It's a little unshaven. And I'm watching the chick. And she's looking in her purse. See, I see she's going through her purse. And I figure, well, you know, she's going to get out the compact. She's going to do a little nose dusting. I've always had, you know, this is a thing that men know. You know, whenever they get the attention of the chick, somehow they get a little flustered, you know, and they start lighting cigarettes or something. So I said, we're going to have to make the scene here. I'm scoring a little bit. She's looking in her purse. And she reaches down in her purse. And she pulls something out. That is the first time I have ever seen a blue steel compact. I look again, you know, I can't believe it. She has got a Roscoe mat that must have weighed 4.25 pounds. This thing was at least a 105 howitzer. I never saw anything like it. I sort of scrunched back. Without saying a word, this chick gets up and walks over to Clem, holds this thing up, and said in a nice, clearly modulated voice with just the touch of a southern accent, "This is a stick-up." There There was a silence that you could have cut with a butter knife. In spite of the jukebox roaring, in spite of the 47 Mercuries that were surrounding us for all miles on end, we just sat there. The truck driver said, "This is a stick-up." Clem said, "What?" She just holds the gun up, doesn't say anything, just points it right at his head. Said, "Oh, I see." He gets up there, you know, he's a fat man. He starts to hitch up his pants. He said, "Pull up your hands." "Oh, I see." And she walks back up the counter and hits the no-sale thing. Boing! With that, this little kid gets up, and he's got a knife in his mitt and a bag. He comes over, and he's shoveling the money in, and there she stands with the Roscoe on all of us. Holy smokes. What do you do now, Matt? Well, she comes out from behind the counter, and Clem is standing there with his mouth hanging open. You see, he ain't moving. He's sweating. The air conditioning is going. The temperature is 34 degrees in this joint, and he's sweating. He just stand there. He ain't moving an eyeball. He isn't going to move. And she comes back from around the counter, and she walks up to each one of us. She says, "Give me a wallet. Come on. Come on. Put it on the counter there." And each one of us reaches in his pocket and lays it out. Sitting there. Boom. Boom. It's the only time in my life I ever got robbed at gunpoint. Boom. Boom. There is five wallets laid out along that four mica counter. Boom, boom, boom. With the ice water. Boom, boom, boom. Between the cheeseburgers. And there ain't a muscle being moved. And she just walks along and picks each one up as she goes. Plunk, plunk, in the bag. The kid's following her. And she's got the Roscoe. Turns around. She says, "I want to thank all of you." Backs out of the joint and then stops by the door. She says, "Stay away from the phone. Count 10. And then you can call anyone you want." She slides the door open, and they're out in the night. And we sat there for a second. And then out in the parking lot, you heard, "Whoom, whoom, wow, ee, whoom," off in the distance. I tell you, crime don't look the way it should look. It just don't look the way it looks on Route 66, Matt. Crime don't look that way. I'll tell you that. It just don't. And we're sitting there, all of us, the whole crowd of us are sitting there kind of with that sweaty feeling inside. And finally, Clem said, I guess we better call the police. And somebody sitting down at the other end of the counter says, "What are you talking about, Clem? That won't do you no damn bit of good." And Clem said, "Well, better call them anyway." And the guy at the other guy said, "Okay, Clem," he said, "use your dime. You got a dime left?" And so we start looking for dimes. We got, we're complained, you know. No, we got no driver's license. The whole scene is gone. I've lost my $19, the whole bit, you know. And so we start looking for dimes, and finally somebody comes up with a dime and goes around, you know, puts it in the water there. They all back up to the thing in the slot and makes the call. And we sat there. And we sat and waited. 15 minutes go by, 20 minutes, and finally that big old car with that flashing red light shows up out in front. And a couple of these real big Covington, Kentucky policemen get out. Oh, man. They get out, they come walking in, you know, they got the big black belts around their waist, you know, a couple of Roscoes hanging on each side, and they come walking in. "What going on in here?" And Clem says, "We've been held up." "Yeah, well, all right, let's have a description. All of you sit down here, give me a description." It's, he gets out his notebook. And Clem says, "Well, it was a girl. A girl, kind of a dark, pretty girl come in here." He said, "Oh, I know, that's Clara, yeah, okay. That's Clara. "Yeah, that's Clara. She's been knocking over joints all around. She just come up from, I believe, she come up from Louisville. Yeah, okay, what time she in here? Let's see, what time is it now? It's 17 minutes past 3. Say, what time? You figured about 10 minutes to 3 she came in here? Okay. 2:51. Was she accompanied?" "And yeah, she came with a little kid. It looks like, yeah, that's Howard. Okay, Howard came in here." We're sitting there. It just don't look like Route 66, you know? This ain't the way it should be. One of the guys at the end says, "You think you'll get him?"
Think you'll get him, Sheriff?
I ain't no sheriff, but I don't think so, no. So I figure we'll get him about spring, maybe. We'll get him next spring, so we'll get him. Don't worry about it. And somebody says, well, what about my driver's license? And you just gotta go down to City Hall tomorrow, tell them that Claire was around, that's all. Maybe they'll find it in the river. Out they go. And I hear the sound. Whoop, whoop. Off goes the fuzz. Well, I sat there for a minute with my straw in my mouth. Clem sits down at the other end. And I'm reaching my pocket to pay. Clem says, it's on the house tonight. We're all busted. I go out into the darkness now. It's now about 3:45, and the heat is laying down on me. A couple of mercuries go by, and I can hear the jukeboxes roaring out of the next juke joint. And I can hear Ernest Tubb wailing in the darkness out there. And somewhere off in the distance, the old paddle wheeler is getting ready to make its first morning trip. Choo, 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 choo. Oh, life is rich. Life is real. Life is life. I'm the sheik of Araby. And your love, baby, belongs to me. Some night when you're asleep. Into your tent, I'll creep, 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 creep. The stars above, da, 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 da. Bring it up there, man. La da da da, la da 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 da, la da 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 da, wa da 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 da, pa 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 pa. That's about all you can do. Sit here and pick your teeth and whistle the Sheik of Araby. Watch the moon go by and figure it'll all work out in the end sometime. All work out. Keep your knees loose. Be ready to jump in any direction. And by the way, be careful of chicks that carry blue steel compacts. That's an entirely different breed. Just an entirely different world entirely.
Thanks for listening. New World Notes is produced in the spacious underground studios of WWUH-FM, a community service of the University of Hartford. Recording of the full Gene Shepherd radio broadcast courtesy of A Infos Radio Project. New World Notes is available off the air by internet stream, podcast, or MP3 download at your convenience. There's an archive of shows you can download. There's also a weekly newsletter and a blog. All is free. For more information, start at the blog. We're at http://newworldnotes.blogspot.com. To receive the newsletter, email a note to kdowst, that's K-D-O-W-S-T, at hotmail.com. The opinions expressed in this program do not necessarily represent the views of the presenter, station management staff, or our gracious hosts and licensee. And they are protected by the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. Your feedback on this program is most welcome. For this, do email kdowst@hotmail.com. This is Jonathan Dowse wishing you a good week, advising Ella Geta my non-kava rum done. Keep the faith and please tune in again. Thank you.